Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there and welcome to a midweek bonus Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. This is not necessarily brand new. If you are an Arseblog member on Patreon, you will have heard this interview before, but that's the benefit to you of being an Arseblog member. You get to hear these things first before anybody else, much like the interview with Liam Brady that was just published yesterday. So if you want to hear that Liam Brady interview talking about his life and times as an Arsenal player, in management, as head of the Arsenal Youth Academy, all you got to do is sign up to be an Arseblog member on Patreon. It's patreon.com/Arseblog. It costs a fiver a month. That's all, just a fiver, and you get access to all the extra content that we put up there, and you get first access to episodes like this, which we do put on general release. But if you are an Arseblog member on Patreon, you get to hear them first, weeks and weeks before anybody else. So, get on board, become one of the cool kids and sign up today at patreon.com/Arseblog. Now, if you are a regular listener, a regular reader of the site, you'll know that Philippe Senderos was always one of my favorite players. He arrived at 18 years of age from Servette in Switzerland, having been wooed by many other clubs around Europe, but at that point, Arsene Wenger and Arsenal was where he wanted to be. His career began very brightly, but as can happen, things don't go always according to plan. And he went to AC Milan on loan. He's played for Fulham, for Aston Villa, for Rangers in Scotland. He's played for AC Milan and Valencia. And at the moment, he's with Houston Dynamo in MLS and actually is in a rich vein of goal-scoring form this month. He scored against Los Angeles FC and scored twice against Minnesota United in a 3-0 win for Houston. Anyway, a couple of weeks ago, Philippe was very kind to give me an hour or so of his time to chat over Skype about his career, about joining Arsenal, about how things went for him here, how it started one way and ended a different way, but those are the vagaries of football. He's very upfront and very honest about his time at Arsenal, but you can tell from the conversation that he still holds the club in great affection, in great regard. He is a supporter, and I'm sure this is a conversation that you are going to enjoy. So, without further ado, this is me and Philippe Senderos. Okay, I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast somebody who I was a big fan of when he arrived at Arsenal, and sometimes you get a player who remains kind of close to your heart, one of your favorite players, and this guy is one of those. Philippe Senderos, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Now, you started your career at Servette in Switzerland. You were, what, 16 or 17 when you made your debut there?
Yeah, I was 16. I started when I was 5 in the youth teams and then went all the way up to the first team. And Lucien Favre, who is now coach of Dortmund, gave me my my big chance, and I played at 16. Yeah.
It is, it's a young age. Obviously, a good friend of yours did something similar at Arsenal, Cesc, when he came in and made his debut at 16. What is that like when you're that age? Obviously, you're confident and you want to play, but at 16, you're also aware that, you know, there are guys in the team who are much more senior than you are. Did you always feel confident that you could come into the team at that age and perform to the level that was required?
I think at 16, you're fearless. You don't really think about what can happen, what shouldn't happen, what should happen, and you just go out there and play the game, and you don't really think too much. And I think that's the strength that a young player has. And then I had a very good coach who gave me the confidence to express myself on the pitch and just play my game. And I think that was a very good chance that I had, and a great opportunity to build from.
And obviously, when you make a breakthrough at that age, it attracts the attention of scouts from across Europe, and Arsenal must have seen you do that and became interested in you. At what point were you aware that Arsenal as a club were interested in you or were scouting you?
I think I was 17. We played with the under-17 Swiss national team. We went to the Euros in Denmark, and I was captain of my national team, and we won the European Championships, which for Switzerland is a historical moment because we never won anything at youth levels or even international level. So it was a great achievement for us, and a lot of the players got attention from big clubs abroad, and one of them for me was Arsenal.
Who else was involved or interested in you at that time? Because I did read that Real Madrid were one of the clubs that might have been after you.
Yeah, I mean, at 17, you know, a young guy, I wasn't really involved in these things. For me, it was going a bit too quick. I was just focusing on my studies and playing. And my parents were dealing with all these things. So they were invited to Madrid. We were invited to Munich. Bayern Munich were interested as well. But like I say, I was 16, 17. I wasn't really involved too much in these things. For me, the names didn't really mean much because I couldn't realize that it was the actual team who was interested in me. Mm. And then I came to Arsenal, and I watched the game, and I fell in love with the place, and I got the chance to meet Arsene, and Arsene just explained how we saw football, and I mean, we connected, and that's, you know, the rest is history, I guess. But you know, for me, it was straightforward. That's where I wanted to come, and I came to Arsenal.
So, I mean, was that a big part of why or what attracted you? Not simply Arsenal. You go and you see the stadium, and it's amazing. And at that stage, Arsenal as a team were amazing as well. But the philosophy of Arsene Wenger. I mean, was he obviously you when you're that age, he's not going to tell you you're definitely going to get first team games, but does he open the door for you in a way to say, look, if you work hard, if you play well, if you train hard, there is an opportunity here for young players at Arsenal?
Yeah, of course. He's not going to tell you you're going to walk straight into the first team dressing room and you're going to play straight away. No, that's for sure. But you see the philosophy. You see that's what they want to do, bring younger players. And when they're ready and when the time is right, you will get your chance. And I think once you get that opening, that chance, you have a you have a chance, so you work towards it. And I think all the young players who come through the ranks at Arsenal, who join Arsenal at a young age, they know, they've seen it happen before, they will get a chance. So once you know that, you work even harder to get that chance.
What was it like leaving home then? At 2003, you were what, 18 years of age? Moving to a new country. I think your language skills have always been particularly good, so that wasn't necessarily a big issue, having to come in and learn a new language. But you still have to leave home at 18 years of age and go to a different country. What's that like, and how did the club help you settle in a way? Because it is a big move, even if we talk about established players, you know, coming from Spain or France or Italy, we talk about them needing a period to adjust or to settle into a new country and a new style of football. It's also true when you're 18, when you've got to start building an entirely new life.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, people are different. You know, me at 18, I'd never been out of my family's environment. So it was a huge move, you know, to come to a different country and start, I don't know, washing my clothes or cooking. Or it was a huge move. So I decided to go into digs. So I lived with a landlady, and Cesc moved in a little bit after.
Yeah.
And we were living together with this lady, and she was helping us around the house, and we were living at her house, really.
Yeah.
So she was helping us do everyday thing, and that helped me settle massively. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to just come in and live in a flat by myself. It would have been a lot harder. So to have this opportunity, you know, the club has put everything in place for me to be well surrounded and not be left alone, and that was great help. And I think for Cesc as well, because Cesc couldn't speak at all, couldn't speak English at all, so it helped him to have me next to him and
you spoke Spanish,
be able to
right?
translate. Yeah,
you spoke Spanish.
Yes, I'm fluent in Spanish because my parents, I grew up bilingual, French and Spanish.
Okay, so I mean, that must have been a huge help for Cesc, you know, to come in a like similar situation when you're coming in at such a young age. You were maybe a couple of years older.
Yeah, he was even younger. And now it was for me, it was great. And I think for him as well, for at least the first year. So that was great. For us, yeah.
You had some injury problems though when you arrived, if I remember correctly.
Yes, for me it was like such a big move. I think everything played a part, and the first few months I was out and I wasn't able to train with the first team as much as I would have liked, and it gave me that time to settle down and you know, to get accustomed to my surroundings. And I think once the year went on, I felt more comfortable and slowly started training with the team again and got involved in Arsenal, really.
Sure. So what is it like as an 18-year-old coming to a new country, coming to a big club like Arsenal, who had won the double in 2002? And, you know, obviously you know that Arsene Wenger has a certain amount of faith in you and your potential to become a first-team player, but also you're looking around at a dressing room with Thierry Henry and Robert Pires and Patrick Vieira, Saul Campbell, Dennis Bergkamp. Is it intimidating, or do you view it as something, I'm going to say not extraordinary, but a real opportunity to learn from hugely talented and experienced players? And were they, as players, willing to help your development and your education as well as the coaches and the manager?
Well, I would say first thing, most of these guys were on my walls in my bedroom, you know. So was it intimidating at first? Yeah, of course, you know, I've dreamed to be in a place like this, but at the same time, this is what I worked for all my life. My dream was this, to be in the Premier League, play in England in one of the biggest teams, and you know, I was actually living what I've dreamed of all my life. So I was in my head prepared for that.
Yeah.
And all I wanted was to succeed. So they were great. You know, as soon as you start putting in the work, they see that you want to do well, you want to succeed. You know, guys accept you in the dressing room. Then you have to do the job on the pitch.
Yeah.
And like I said, it took me a little while, but once I got used to the place, I was able to train with the team and to show what I was made of. And, you know, I wasn't going to just give up or stop now, because I went, you know, from Switzerland to arrive to England. It's not easy. And I had this chance, so I was going to work even harder.
I mean, obviously you're going to work hard because you have that chance anyway, but is there something about working with those really established players who are winners and who have won things where you go, I really have to get to a really high level to get into this team because these players are so good?
Yeah, I had to step my level up massively, definitely. I mean, coming from the Swiss League to the Premier League, especially in that team at that time, I had to make a lot of improvements and being there and seeing what they were doing on a daily basis gave me that chance. You know, maybe being injured at the beginning helped me settle down, but also observe what these champions were doing, you know.
Yeah.
And to see this on a daily basis, you know, helped me and motivated me to do even more.
People talk about Arsene Wenger when they talk about him as a coach, and they talk about his attacking philosophy, and I think we all know that that's where the way he likes to play the game. He likes his teams to be offensive and to be on the ball and everything else. But you're a young defender. What was his way of working like for you in order to develop as a player and in order to develop as a defender? And were there other coaches perhaps were able to take you under their wing a little bit more to focus on that side of your game?
Yeah, Boro Primorac was there, Pat Rice was there, and the great guys, the great defenders that that Arsenal back line had. You know, yeah. We talk about the offensive game at Arsenal, but really what brought the titles and the championship and the unbeaten year is this steal in the team, and the defense was tremendous in that year. I mean, everyone will remember that defense, and that was the core of the team. So you know, seeing the work they would put in day in, day out, the communication, the hard work, and it was great for me. It's a great place to learn, and the coach is definitely very influential in the improvement of that.
What do you remember about your debut? It was a game against Manchester City in the Carling Cup, right?
Yeah, a very different Manchester City, if you may say.
Certainly very different from the one we see today, yeah. And, you know, yeah, a notable
a lot of the young players yeah. made their debut on that day.
That's right.
It was very special for all of us. And, yeah, we stuck at it, and we got a win on the road. It was great experience for all of us. Our first taste of first team football, if I may say,
yeah.
Even if it was the Carling Cup or whatever, but we knew it was going to come in one of those competitions. So we were ready, and, you know, it was a great achievement for all of us.
What's that like when you're told? How long before the game were you aware that you were going to play?
I mean, you knew the Carling Cup was a competition where they might make some changes. So you're kind of aware of it, but until the week before, you don't really know what's happening. So, yeah, I would say a week before. And then when it happens, you're just super excited. You just can't wait for the game to come. And then once you're in the game, then it's on, you know. Yeah. You don't really think anymore. Just focus on what you can control, and that's it.
Can you remember the team lineup from that night?
I can remember that one of my best friends scored a tremendous goal, and I'm still very close to him to this day, and that's probably for him the highlight, one of his highlights of his career, and for me as well, because it was my debut. So sure. We share something very special.
Yeah, that's Danny Carbassioun who yes. scored the winner that night at Main Road. And, yeah, we got to thank him as well for helping to facilitate this interview. So cheers, Danny.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Now, your Champions League debut, I mean, there was because there was, at that point, I think there was real faith in Arsene Wenger when he decided to give young players a chance. And obviously, in later years, perhaps that was a little bit different. But there was sort of a weight of expectation on the young players when they were given, I won't say a real first-team debut, because Carling Cup is obviously a first-team competition. But mm-hmm. when you make that step up to play in the Premier League, and when you make that step up to play in the Champions League, you know, there are more eyes on you, there are more people watching you, and you did go on to make some Premier League appearances in that first year. But I remember very, very distinctly your Champions League debut, which was at home to Bayern Munich. A 1-0 win at home to Bayern Munich. Thierry Henry scored the goal. But I remember that night because you were fucking brilliant. Absolutely. You were just amazing that night. I remember sitting there going, oh my God, this is fantastic. Were you aware that night how well you played? Perhaps it boils down to that thing you said earlier about not having any real fear. This was Bayern Munich. We'd lost the previous leg, unfortunately, away from home. But it was a great performance that night from you.
Yeah, like I said before, I was fearless and I wasn't thinking, and I remember running all night. I remember chasing all night, and that's all I remember from that first Champions League game. But a great, great memory again. Unfortunate that we didn't go through. I think that's what it was. It was a knockout. So, great memory. To play at Highbury was special, and it felt like home for me, and always felt like home. And I mean, every player will tell you, but it feels like you're playing in your own
garden,
back garden, yeah. You know, and it felt like, really felt like home. And it's a place that I feel very close to because of that, because I felt so comfortable there.
It was an amazing stadium, an amazing ground, and there was always there was just something special about it. It was sort of soaked into the foundations of that stadium. So yeah, mm-hmm. You're not the first person to have used that analogy, that Highbury felt like playing in your own garden. That season ended with an FA Cup final.
Yes.
And you kept Sol Campbell out of the side. He'd been injured, I think, for a little while and had come back, but he was on the bench that day and you were given the nod to start the game alongside Kolo Touré at the centre of our defence. We were without a number of players that day, Thierry Henry mm-hmm. in particular. Dennis Bergkamp, I think, started the game on his own up front.
Yeah.
Perhaps one of the first times we've seen Arsene Wenger adjust his tactics in that way, where he had to be a little more defensive, or he had to try and play the game in a slightly different way against a Manchester United team at that stage, which had, you know, Roy Keane, Paul Scholes, Cristiano Ronaldo, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Wayne Rooney. It was a backs to the wall kind of a performance from Arsenal.
Yeah, I think he always adapted in some way. Obviously, the Arsenal way was always keep the ball, to play offensive football, but he always kind of adapted to what you were playing against. Maybe not as obvious as that day. And that day, we really stuck at it. We defended. Maybe people will say it was a one-sided story because we defended. We were very deep, and we're trying to hold to what we were keeping, you know. And it was a final. We knew if we can get a chance, we will nick something on a counter or something, and we stuck at it. And eventually, you know, we took it all the way to extra time. We got some chances and penalties. We won, and it was a great run in the FA Cup. I remember the semi-finals was special as well. We played at Cardiff, and then that final was fantastic. My family was there in the stands, and it was, for me, the most amazing day,
yeah.
Really.
There's a fantastic picture, I think, of the Arsenal players as Patrick Vieira takes the final penalty, and everybody's just taking off, and you're just first with this, like, amazing.
Yeah. After 120 minutes, I wouldn't be able to do it nowadays. I wouldn't be first, but back then I still had energy, so.
An amazing experience, I think, to go and win an FA Cup final in that way against a team like Manchester United, of course, who were still an absolutely brilliant team. The following season, you played a lot of games, and you became part of a defence which I'm not sure if it's still the record to this day, but back then it certainly was a Champions League record, where mm-hmm. the back four and the goalkeeper went for, I can't remember how many minutes it is, without conceding a goal. It was, I suppose, in some ways considered a little bit makeshift, because Emmanuel Eboué had come in at right back, Mathieu Flamini was playing at left back. It was amazing.
And I was playing at centre back.
Yeah, you were playing at centre back. Of course, yourself and Kolo were there. But, you know, it was an amazing thing to watch that team, and watch that back four in particular, go on this run all the way to the final, of course. I mean, I was there in the Bernabeu watching Arsenal beat Real Madrid 1-0. Again, I'd say a fantastic experience to play in a stadium like that against a team like that. Again, the height of the Galacticos with Ronaldo and with Beckham, et cetera, et cetera. That was an amazing night as well.
Yeah, I mean, that run was special. It was an amazing year for me, maybe one of the best that I've had consistency-wise. And an amazing year for Arsenal Football Club. That night, what I remember about this night is that I've been with my dad. He's been a Real Madrid fan all his life. I've watched Real Madrid since I'm a young kid. I've been to the Bernabeu. They used to come pre-season to Switzerland, so I used to see them every single year, the Real Madrid team. And I've been Real Madrid all my life, you know.
Yeah.
So what I remember about that day is being the most nervous I've ever been all my life, and throwing up on the pitch before the game. And
oh, really?
And I couldn't hold my nerves. Like I was so nervous. I didn't know what I was doing. And once the whistle blew, it was on. You know, the game was started, and I forgot all about where I was, what I was doing, and I was just focusing on my game. But before the game, just a bag of nerves, if I may say.
Yeah. How is that something that develops over the course of your career, when you become established a bit, when you've developed a bit as a player? You know, you go from having no fear to perhaps understanding the consequences of everything that you do on the pitch, and whether it's positive or negative, you know, everything that you do can have an impact on the team. And there is, of course, a measure of expectation. Once you start performing to a certain level, you have to maintain that level.
Oh, it depends. I've always been a nervous person, so I need a bit of nerves to be able to compete. So everyone is very different. By fear, I mean, you start being more conscious later of what you're doing, but the stress level is always there. I mean, I need the stress to be able to perform, and then it's managing that stress to the point of it affects your performance, or you can manage that stress to help you run faster, play better.
Yeah,
you know, I always make the analogy in my head. You have a lion running behind you, and yeah, you need a bit of stress to be able to run faster.
Yeah.
You know, but too much stress and you freeze and you're not going to do anything. So you need to know there is something behind you, so you run faster. So on the pitch is the same. Yeah, you have to manage that amount of stress to be able to perform at the highest level. And I think that comes with experience, and everyone is different, like I say. I need some stress. So sometimes some games when I don't feel stressed, or I don't feel that little thing that you should feel on game day, I try to add it to myself, to my game, to the dressing room, because I don't feel it, you know, and I need to feel something before the game. So I'm up for it. Yeah.
So is that's something that you can internalize? I mean, how does it work if you're looking around the dressing room? Because obviously, you know, if you're somebody who needs a bit of stress, there are other players who are just completely and utterly relaxed before they go out.
Like, who would be? You can hear me shout before the game, and everyone else is looking around and thinking, what is he on, you know? This is just me. I need to feel that something in the atmosphere, and you know, people are used to it, I guess, when they play with me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arseblog.
How difficult was it when it came to the final and you'd been part of that run? Saul Campbell had been out injured. Ashley Cole had been out injured. In hindsight, how do you look back at that decision that Arsene Wenger made to bring back Saul, to bring back Ashley Cole for the final against Barcelona in Paris? I mean, it must have been hugely disappointing to be left out, but did you understand it?
What happened is we played against Spurs a few weeks before at Highbury, and I hurt my knee. I hurt my knee ligament.
Oh, okay.
And I did everything. I battled to be back in the squad for the final. I couldn't play the return leg in Villarreal. So I played the first leg, then we played Spurs, then I missed the second leg. And I couldn't walk for a week or 10 days, and I tried everything. I took anti-inflammatories. I said, just do anything. I need to be ready for the final.
Yeah.
Once I knew we were in the final, I did everything to be in the final. I don't think I could kick a ball with my right foot because my ligament wasn't very, like, it was hurting, but I did everything to be in that final, and thankfully I made the bench, and on the day I was ready to play. But you know, I understand the decision. I wish I played, but I had not played for a couple of weeks or 2-3 weeks before, and I only had a few days training, so
yeah,
you know. I understand as well the decision.
Sure.
And Saul scored the goal, you know. Sometimes it happens, you can say something if the player doesn't do well, but if he scores the goal, you just sit and watch, you know.
Sure, sure. And you went on to the World Cup then. Was the knee injury a problem in the World Cup as well? I mean, you scored, didn't you?
I was ready for the final. I was ready. I was fit. But, I had not played before, so I understand, you know, playing in a final after not having played for a few weeks. I understand. I understood the decision. The manager explained it as well. And, I made the job professional as I could. And of course, I was disappointed not to have played. But I was most disappointed that we didn't win. And I think the team was more important than.
Sure, sure. No, I understand.
And then in the World Cup, it was fine. It was great experience for me. Really, probably the best memories that I have in the World Cup were in that World Cup. And
close to home, of course.
Very close to home, which made it even more special. I mean, we were getting to the games, and there was the streets were full of red. Of red everywhere.
Yeah.
And Swiss fans were everywhere. And it was an amazing experience. We played against Togo in the second game in Dortmund. And what I remember is the red wall. Normally that wall is yellow and black, but the stadium was maybe 80% full of Swiss fans. And I think that day we beat the record of attendance, because we don't have a stadium. The biggest stadium is 40,000 in Switzerland.
Right.
40,000 people. And that day there was, I don't know, 70, 80,000 Swiss fans in that stadium. So in modern day football, that was a record of attendance.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah. The next season at Arsenal, things didn't probably go as well as you would have liked. You know, I think it's normal for players to have ups and downs and peaks and troughs in their career. But how did you feel during that season? Because I think there were a couple of red cards along the way. I think at least one of them was absolutely ridiculous. I can't remember which one it was. It might have been against Middlesbrough. Was that
from
the one?
My way or from the...
No, I mean ridiculous. It was never a red card. That's all I mean. The referee was ridiculous, not you.
Yeah.
But, you know, when things start going not as well as you would like, or when things start going wrong, how difficult is it to come to terms with that? I mean, how... because a manager, of course, is under pressure to produce results for his football team and for the football club. And if a player is out of form, it becomes more difficult to bring him back in. How did you cope with that? I mean, it must have been a difficult period in your career.
Yeah, I mean, when you're not performing as well as you know you should, of course it's difficult. And you know, one thing that I might say, you know, I always tried my best. I always tried to give 100% and worked as hard, even harder than anyone else, because I know I might not have been the most talented, but I was putting the work in and I was ready for every time I was called upon. So that's one thing. And yeah, when things don't go your way, you try to work, continue to work hard and to be ready for the next time you get a chance. And it is difficult when you don't play regularly or you don't get a run of games, and then all of a sudden you get thrown in for a tough game, and then you don't play for another few games, and then you play. It's not a criticism. It's just showing, you know, the other aspect. Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's not having very good games, but the run of games, that's what always I always needed few games to get into the rhythm. And once you get that rhythm, you know, you can build on performances. If you don't get a rhythm, and that's for everyone, it's difficult to build on a performance if you haven't had a game before, especially as a center back defender, where you don't really come into games. It's not like a striker or midfielder or even right or left back. You don't really come into games in the last part of the game or whatever. So it's always harder to get minutes. It's either you play from start or you don't play.
Yeah.
So it's not an excuse. Just explaining the situation.
Yeah, it's the reality of it, isn't it? Yeah.
And it is tough times, of course, when things don't go well, because I know I can produce, I could produce much better. And there is competition in the team, you know. Other players play as well, and they earn their place. So you know, the good competition, that's what makes you better. And I think I learned a lot in the times where things weren't going as well as they should have.
Mm. What does a manager do with you specifically in a situation like that? I mean, does he just expect you to get on with it and to work hard and to perform when you're given the chance? Or is there, I mean, you were still really quite young at that point. You know, you're only, 22 years of age?
Yeah.
You know,
it's
young in the life of a center half, isn't it? Because we can still, you know, there's so much about that position that's about experience and about playing games and about being able to read the game and everything else. So at 22, you're still learning, despite the fact you've been playing since you were 16. What was Arsene Wenger's way of dealing with you at that period of time?
No, always great. Always great. I was very grateful of the chances that he gave me and the conversations we always had, you know, always supporting, always understanding where I was coming from and the positions of every single player. And I think the best a manager can do is do this, to see where players are coming from and what situations they're in. And me, I was still learning, you know. Like you say, I've played a lot of games. I've played here and there, but I was still learning the trade, still getting used to, you know, being around the place and competing on a daily basis. So, yeah, when things don't go your way, you're trying to, you know, stay and work hard and trying to focus on what you can when you can touch and do and. And that's what I tried to do, but the manager was great.
What was the thinking behind the loan move to Milan in 2008-2009? Was it a case that this was like a precursor to a permanent move, or was it when you went out there, it was like, okay, well, go play in Serie A, you know, experience this different kind of football, work with some amazing players at that period for Milan. Paolo Maldini was still there, Gattuso, Nesta, Zambrotta, and amazing defensive players along with Kaká, Pirlo. What was the club's thinking when you had discussions with them about this move? Was it, okay, go, maybe, you know, come back then and build on that, or was it something different?
So in that summer, we signed Thomas Vermaelen, who was going to be a starter for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very impressive in preseason. He'd had a very good season before. and he was very good. I mean, he was gonna play for sure at left center back, and I was usually used as a left center back at Arsenal, so I could see kind of things that were gonna happen, and with the season before that wasn't my best season, I thought, okay, they've signed a new center back. I kind of understood, you know, the situation without anyone explaining.
Yeah.
And then after preseason, I'm sitting at home, and I remember the league was going to start in a few weeks, and all of a sudden I get a phone call from Matteo Flamini, and he says, look, we're sitting here at the table in Milan, they're asking me if you would be interested to come to Milan.
Matthew Flamini.
Yeah, we just moved there after preseason. We played AC Milan in the Champions League the year before.
Yeah.
And apparently they've asked him, look, there's this center back, whatever. What do you think of him? Because we need a center back here this year. And he said, yeah, well, let me call him. So he called me and he asked me, and I said, look, I'm here on the contract, obviously. I'm not going to say anything stupid now, but let me talk and see what can happen. You know, at that time, I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to play much at Arsenal. Mm. I've got a chance to maybe go to AC Milan. You know, I have to put everything on the table and see what my options can be. Of course, my goal was to stay at Arsenal, play at Arsenal, and you know, play as long as possible in that fantastic club.
Yeah.
And for Arsene Wenger. So I go the next day and I speak to the manager with my agent and etc. And then in the end, we come to the conclusion that it might be the best option for me to go to Milan. And yeah, like you said, experience the atmosphere, to be there with the great champions, learn and see what can happen. You know, either stay there or come back with a bag full of experience, you know. Yeah. So that was the goal, kind of thing, for me in my head, going there, learning, playing as many games as possible, and maybe come back to Arsenal and do well at Arsenal. You know, I got the chance. I went there, and for me, it was amazing. A striking day, the first day. Two players were leaving, Brocchi and Odo. And they were crying. The guys were crying because they were leaving the club. And the people were getting in a circle and, you know, embracing them and kissing and all sorts of Italian things that whatever they do. And the guys were crying. I mean, I was shocked. I just came from Arsenal to Milan. I don't remember anyone crying back home, you know. And I get there, the guys weren't even going to bad places. I mean, Odo was going to Bayern Munich, and Brocchi was going to Lazio.
Right.
You know, and that was for me a shock. I thought, okay, I come to a family here. This is not even a football team, you know. This is a family. Guys don't want to leave. They die to stay here in this place. And that was the first day, you know.
Wow.
They made me feel part of this group, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot during that year, how to work, how to behave in a place like this, how to live in these conditions, because they're under pressure every single day to win. Of course, at Arsenal you are as well, but you're a bit more secluded in a way. In Italy, you live, everyone leaves football, and it's a constant thing to win. You have to win. You have to play there. You have to win every single game. And it's the same at Arsenal, really, but you don't feel it as much.
I mean, the there's a bit more access, isn't there, for fans in Italy to express their...
Yeah, I mean, there was 100 fans every single day outside of the training ground. So there was a little road leading up to the gates.
Yeah.
And you had to open your window a little bit, but people were just jumping on your car before you get to the training ground. And that was me. Imagine when the other lads were were driving past. So it was a great experience. I loved my time there. I experienced something different that I think when you're in England or in, well, definitely not in Switzerland, but in countries like this, you experience something different. And that was, for me, a big eye-opener.
How much have injuries had an impact on your career? Because I think you had a loan move to Everton, and you only played a couple of games for them, and I think you signed for Fulham, and you had a bad injury fairly soon after joining them, an Achilles tendon injury. You know, at that point of your career, when you've come back from Milan and you've, as you said, learned an awful lot, you're 24, 20, heading on 25, you know, into what you would hope will be the peak years of your career. Does it hamper your confidence, your physical ability? How much of an impact do you think they've had on your career down the years?
Well, it affects every player. I mean, injuries affect every single player. It affects some players more. And I think when I was younger, until the Milan time, I think it used to beat me up a lot. To get injured, to get hurt, it used to break my rhythm. And I used to beat myself up for the injuries and be very hard on myself and stuff. But I think afterwards I kind of learned to accept that, okay, I'm a player who might get injured more than the average, and I accepted that in a way. It's been very hard. Of course, it's been very hard. I won't lie to you. You know, to be injured is the worst thing that a player can experience, and I hate not being out there with the team, and I hate not being able to train because I love what I do on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So yeah, it has had a massive impact on my career, on my development, on what I could do. But it does this to every single player. You know, every player gets injuries, and there's no excuse on why you're here or you're there. I think everyone in the end gets to where they should be, and you get what you're worth, you know. So I was lucky enough to experience these things, and the bad moments were learning experiences.
Yeah. You know?
So it was great. I'm glad that I went through these bad moments to appreciate even more what I do on a daily basis.
Sure.
That's for sure.
I mean, you could look back and say, you can see perhaps for certain players where they get a break along the way and it has a massively positive effect on their careers.
Yeah.
Other times, I mean, you're 33 now, so, you know, are you able to look back without regrets? Are you able to sort of say, okay, I am where I am and I'm, you know, happy doing what I'm doing? You know, I suppose it's impossible really to, you get too down in the dumps maybe if you think about what might have been rather than what actually is.
No, but what might have been, it is not the truth. It's what is. You know, I'm forever grateful to God, to whoever people believe, that everything that happened it's been the best that was wished for me. You know, so I'm forever grateful of the life that I live, that I've been able to live from my passion all these years, and I continue to do it, and thankfully, you know, it's been great. I mean, I love my career. I love what I've done in my career, and I've played for amazing teams, and I continue to play here in the MLS. And you know, I love what I do. The important thing also, my son can see me play, and you know, that's a great gift that I have, and I want to continue for him.
Sure. So
my family. Yeah.
So have you, given you are 33 and perhaps into the final stages of your playing career, have you given any thought to what comes next and what you might want to do? I mean, do you want to stay in football? Is coaching or management something that you feel like you might want to do?
Yeah, I do think about what I want to do in the future because it's a big part of the rest of my life, you know. So I was always aware of the outside world. You know, I just speak to my friends and I know they have real problems. You know, me being injured is not, it's a real problem in my world, but wasn't really a real problem in 99% of people's problems. So for this, you know, I was always aware of what was outside. And after my career, yeah, I do love what I do. You know, I love football, and I would love to stay in football. Coaching might be an option, and being part of a football club would be an option as well in other ways than coaching. So, I'd like to stay in football, but, you know, it's still early. I still like to concentrate
on playing
as many years as possible.
Sure.
And we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Just final question for our listeners. I mean, you've played for Milan, you've played for Fulham, Valencia, Aston Villa, Grasshoppers, Rangers. But I think people will always associate you with Arsenal. What's your connection? Do you still feel a real connection to Arsenal, given you came at a young age? And, you know?
Yeah, I'm an Arsenal fan. I mean, my son, I tried to show him we're Arsenal fans. This is our team, and I love Arsenal. You know, I don't need to shout it on every house, but this is where I have the most connections, and my time that I enjoyed the most. You know, and what has given me the most as a person, as a player, is probably Arsenal. So, I'm forever grateful first to Arsene Wenger and Arsenal Football Club. And then I'm a big fan, so I'm following the team every time they play, and
Very finally, then, are you excited about what appears to be a new era with Unai Emery? It's a big change. There are changes happening all over the club, of course. Freddie Ljungberg, Per Mertesacker, at academy level, all these kind of things are happening. Are you excited for the new season when it comes around?
Yeah, I was a bit. Sad, of course, to see all things change, but sometimes change can bring good also. So we will see what the future holds. But I am excited for the new season, because I would like to see what will change and how will Arsenal change. And I know a little bit of Unai Emery, because I've played against his teams in the past. When he was at Sevilla, and I know of him because he was at Valencia before I came, and I know how he wants to play, so that's exciting as well.
And we've got a Swiss defender in the squad again.
Yes, that's amazing for him. I'm really, really happy for him. He's a great professional. He's like a train, honestly. He goes up and down that line 100 times per game, and he's 34 years old, so. No, he's an amazing professional, and that's credit to him. I mean, he's always been very serious, very, very professional. I mean, it's a word that we use a lot, but he's very much of an example for a lot of young players, I think. So it's great for him to come at that age to the Premier League. It's great, especially coming after, I don't know, 17 titles with Juventus. It's an amazing achievement for him.
He will certainly bring some experience of winning to Arsenal, and hopefully he can bring some of that to next season. But Philippe, thank you very much indeed for your time. Really, really appreciate it. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you, Andrew. Good luck.
So there you go. That was me and Philippe Senderos. Thank you very much indeed to Philippe for giving me his time. I really appreciate it. And to Danny Carbassian, who was kind of the go-between, who helped facilitate that interview. So thank you very much indeed, Danny. I hope you enjoyed it. I think Philippe was very honest and open, very sanguine about his life and times at Arsenal and his career in general. I hope he has a great time out in MLS. Keep scoring those goals, and we'll see where he is in a few years' time if he continues his career after his playing days as a coach or maybe a manager. Who knows? We shall see. Remember, you could have listened to this first weeks ago by being an Arsblog member on Patreon. Sign up for a fiver a month at patreon.com/Arsblog. If that's not your bag, that's okay. Maybe you could give the show a rating or a review on iTunes. That would be fantastic. Also, until the Arscast on Friday, take it easy. Have a good one. Cheers. Bye-bye.
It's only going to be audio?
Yeah, it's only audio because the sound quality works better without video. Sometimes the video can interfere with the sound quality. So if it's no problem...
No, I did my hair and makeup and everything.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Oh, well. Okay, maybe another time we can...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.